This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
And the heavens just opened up right after that game yesterday. Legitimate thunder, lightning, the whole deal. My DirecTV went out. And all I could think of was, that couldn't have happened 15 minutes earlier?
Yeah.
Then I would have been spared the end of that game. I could have essentially Larry Salk ruled this thing and just been like, yeah, Seahawks won, just like they're supposed to. Instead, I had to go through the pain and agony of watching the end of that thing. Ugh, just garbage. Terrible way to lose a game. Seahawks just unable to get it done in the fourth quarter, give up a big lead, and then also unable offensively to put it away with a couple of opportunities. So, not great. Pete Carroll will join us coming up at 9:30 this morning. Lots of questions for him, including about Richard Sherman rumors that are floating around out there and his future with whether it's the Seahawks, the Niners, the Bucks, a bunch of other teams that have been linked to Richard Sherman. We'll talk about Trey Flowers, Sidney Jones. There's a lot going on. We'll talk to Pete at 9:30. Right now, though, let's do some takeaways.
Takeaways.
All right, there's a chance for a series of takeaways, things that get noticed during the course of a game. We'll start with this one. I think judging any single player is complicated business in the NFL, especially on defense, right, where everything is so linked one thing to the next. But I want to talk about Bobby Wagner and what kind of a game it was for him, because he did have some terrific plays. Certainly you'd expect that when you see 20 tackles on a box score. And yet, people I know football, yes, Brock's one of them, seem to offer a lot of criticism of Bobby when they're watching him on film. And so I'll just say this. I don't know all the details of where Bobby's supposed to be in a zone or how he gets after each play or whether he, you know, attempts to keep himself alive longer, right, by avoiding contact at times. But what I do know is at the money he's making, what I expect from Bobby Wagner are big game-changing plays. Forced fumbles, huge sacks, stops an inch from the first down line, fourth down stops, passes defensed in a big moment. I expect big-time plays from big-time players in the NFL, and I thought we got those from Bobby yesterday, right? The game was going the wrong direction early. You have a three and out. Tennessee drives right down the field. They get to a goal yard, you know, something in goal situation, and that's when Bobby steps up on third.
Tannehill from the shotgun with a slot near side. Tannehill gets hit and goes down on the blitz. Bobby Wagner came flashing through untouched, and he just buried Tannehill.
He sure did, and so there's your first big play. He had another one in overtime, third and 15. I don't know, say what you want about him in the zone. He deflected that ball, or he was right there with it, and they end up getting the ball back with a chance to win. So I thought Bobby had a good game. I know that there's probably some issues in coverage. It sure seems like they target his area in zone quite a bit, but overall, I'll take it.
Takeaways.
On the other hand, where was Carlos Dunlap? Where was Rasheem Green? Where was Benson Mayoa? Daryl Taylor? I'll probably go on.
Thank
All
you.
The talk last week about the rotational pass rush, the advantage that they would have at home, especially without Taylor Lewan, their star left tackle, who I know is not the same player, but not playing in the game, hurt his knee in pregame warmups. There were a few big plays from the defense, but all in all, the pass rush was inconsistent at best, and when you combine it with the inability to control the running game, I thought it was a setback for that defensive line position, especially defensive end. What happened to them?
Well, looking at some of the snap counts coming out, Carlos Dunlap only played 30% of the snaps versus 53% week one, and Daryl Taylor played 23 snaps total.
Why? I mean, it seemed like those guys, look, I'm sure there's a reason. We can ask Pete about it. Alton Robinson, another guy, doesn't get a lot of snaps, but when he was in there, he sure made a count.
Single setback with a tight slot to the right side. Play fake to Henry. He gets hit. Ball comes out. Seahawks jump on it. Seahawks football at the five-yard line of Tennessee. Ryan Tannehill never saw it coming. I'm not sure who got through, but Kerry Hyder recovered. I believe it was Alton Robinson who got through for the sack, the forced fumble. And the Seahawks defense, wow, have they hit their stride. And the offense now looks at a short field of 6 yards to try to punch this one in.
Well said by Rabes, if they hit their stride. And unfortunately, that was the high point for them They didn't hit their stride. They didn't put a lot of pressure on Tannehill. And when they did, Jamal Adams completes, you know, commits a dumb penalty by pushing him when he absolutely did not need to.
I thought that was Jamal that made that play from, again, from the 300s. I thought it was Jamal that got the sack fumble.
No, it was a really nice play by Alton Robinson. I mean, he just got after it. And Kerry Hyder had a pretty good game, so maybe that was why one of those guys didn't play as much. Maybe Kerry Hyder got more snaps. I don't know. Maybe it's a matchup thing based on the style of offense that's being run. Regardless of the reason, unfortunately, a lot of the gains that we saw there last week seem to go the opposite direction this week.
Takeaways.
Yeah, it's not my number one culprit, but 10 penalties for 100 yards?
Yeesh.
Say that out loud. The Seahawks allowed a whole other 100-yard rusher worth of penalties in this game, in addition to the 200 yards rushing they allowed. They only ran for 77 yards as a team in this game, and that included the, 30-yard run from Collins that was unexpected? And they allowed 100 yards worth of penalties, four of them on DK Metcalf? Yeah, Pete Carroll after the game, not wild about all that.
No, and I don't have any question about the calls or any of that kind of stuff. I'm not talking about refereeing or any of that. It's just we have to do better. We have to play better and handle the situation so that we get the benefits of all of the good play. And we gave him some stuff. We gave him way too much stuff. And like I said, you give a good team that much, they keep hanging. They're tough. They got great players and terrific approach to the game and all that. And it came through and they won a game with it. And credit to them.
Yeah, they played undisciplined in this one. I don't know how else you say it. You have, 3 15-yard penalties that all mattered in various ways. I mean, you have the DJ Reed taunting penalty. I know you don't like the rule, but it is a good call according to the rule, and you should have known better. You got the Jamal Adams late hit penalty on the quarterback, which is a good call according to another stupid rule. And you have the Jordan Brooks penalty, which is definitely a late hit. He shoves him when he doesn't need to.
There's 45 yards of the 100.
And then add in, I think it was Damian Lewis who jumped off sides as a false start when they were lining up to maybe go for it on fourth down. Those 50 yards in penalties played a massive role in the game.
Six first downs, I think, for Tennessee.
That's a lot. Just by those four, taking all the rest away, just those four, are all undisciplined penalties that specifically hurt them in the game. Can't have
emotional.
It. Yeah. Cannot have it. Overly emotional. And it leads perfectly to the next takeaway.
Takeaways.
Because I think DK deserves his own. Four of those penalties were on him, including two on one play.
My
it wasn't even
was,
a good play.
My section was not happy with DK.
Well, I would imagine. Nor is the text machine today. He did finish with 6 catches, 53 yards. DK is confusing and confounding at times. He's the most talented guy in the field. Along with maybe Derrick Henry yesterday.
Yeah,
he's the most talented guy on the field most days. He's bigger, faster, stronger, etc. than everyone else he will ever see on that football field. And he's certainly not for lack of hard work. He works his tail off. He doesn't complain that much. For a wide receiver who doesn't get targeted all the time, he doesn't complain a ton. I'm not calling him a diva. But what's going on with him? I think it at least warrants a question right now. The penalties keep mounting up. The taunting, the extracurricular stuff, is it helping him or is it hurting him?
Is he trying to inspire himself and in doing so shooting himself in the foot?
I don't know. I think that's what I'm trying to ask or trying to find out. Maybe. I think that's a fair question. Look, what doesn't it just seem like something's going on with him always recently?
Yeah.
And, a lot of it is, he likes to have attention on him. That's not unique for wide receivers. And by the way, I don't mind it. I like the blue hair and the multicolored different hairdos. I don't mind the pacifier. I think it's probably not the look I would go for if I were in the NFL. But I'm not DK Metcalf. I think it's kind of endearing. There's a lot about him that's super endearing. This is not a crush-killed DK takeaway. But something just seems to be going on with him right now. He has not had a dominant start to the year. He's gotten his catches, but he has not had a dominant DK Metcalf kind of start to this year. He does have a touchdown, and he's made some big plays, but he just hasn't seemed himself yet. And it also seems like he's gotten himself maybe taken out of the game a little bit with some of the head games he's trying to play, and the NFL is saying, you can't play those head games anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't want that.
Right.
Do you think the lack of him being involved, until... You got a little bit in the fourth quarter against the Colts, but has not being involved in it, mostly being the Tyler Lockett show, do you think that's actually frustrating him
and
it's coming out in these ways?
I sure hope not. I would sure hope that, and I would hope not. I don't think so, because I have a lot of respect for
DK. We always
DK.
Hear that the receivers don't care on this
That's
team,
right.
But
And then it's not that no one's getting the ball. Tyler's been open and he's gotten some big plays. Does he want some of them himself? I'm sure he does in what is essentially a contract year. I got a lot of respect for DK Metcalf. I don't think that that's the problem.
Nobody's afraid to be DK more than DK. And in doing so, I think that that's where some of this comes back on him because he has been given that.
Takeaways.
Did I miss something? How did Arizona pass Seattle for false starts since 2005? How's that possible? Is the eerie quiet in the desert what causes people to jump off sides? How does Arizona pass Seattle? Do you know what they call their fans in Arizona? Like the 12s are here in Seattle. Do you know what they're called in Arizona?
No, I have no idea.
The opposing team?
They call yes. The opposing fans. They call them the Red Sea. Do you know what the Red Sea is most famous for? Being parted.
Parted, yeah.
Always makes me laugh. Their entire fan base is best known for being parted so somebody else could walk right through them. Bizarre. How is Arizona ahead of Seattle in false starts since 2005? Come on, guys. Get back to it. That can't happen.
Takeaways.
It's always fun seeing games on CBS. I had forgotten that this was going to be a CBS game. So I was on Fox at like 1:20 or so. I was like, what are they doing? Why are they still showing highlights? Shouldn't I find out who has the game? Oh, it's on CBS. So jump over to Cairo, jump over to CBS. And I forgot, a whole game on CBS means CBS promos the whole game. You don't get to see that many Seahawks games on CBS. You get all the letter shows. NCIS, FBI, CSI. Have you seen their newest? IRS. It's the story of a rogue accountant who plays by his own rules.
No, really?
Yeah, they have some new ones coming too. IRS Duluth, IRS Jefferson City, Missouri. I watch CBS sometimes, and I legitimately wonder how this network stays in business. And I kind of think that about all four of the major networks, but how does CBS stay in business? It can't just be through football in 60 minutes, can it? Who the heck watches this garbage? NCIS, CSI, FBI, who watches that?
The ratings are very good for all of them.
I remember Quibi came out last year, and like I actually thought it was kind of a good idea that clearly was poorly executed and poorly timed. But the biggest problem with Quibi as I was watching is that all their shows had that CBS look to it. That like weird fake CSI. I don't understand why all their shows look like that.
It's like a polish to it that just doesn't feel real.
It's a fake polish, a veneer of sorts. It's awful. I absolutely, like the moment I see an ad for something new on CBS, I just start laughing. I can't believe that they find all these old stars from 20 years ago
and
just throw them into a new show with a bunch of letters. FBI. Who has the Chicago series? Are those on NBC or CBS? Those look terrible too.
Chicago Fire.
Chicago Hospital. Chicago.
They have Tacoma FD. Is that right?
That's the guys from Broken Lizard.
Yeah, is that CBS? Yeah. Who's that?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Jay Heffernan's group, or Jay Chandrasekhar, that's his name, Kevin Heffernan. Yeah.
Varva.
All right, one more. Nope, no more. We're done. Oh. Here we go. One more. I promise one more. You're going to have to do we get chill music for this one. Good. Let's keep us chill. We're going to have to do something about Trey Flowers. Can we all agree something has to be done about Trey Flowers? It's been 4 years. It hasn't changed enough. You throw in the huge mistake and the 60-yard touchdown run, it just can't happen. I don't know if Sidney Jones is the answer. I don't know if they need to go outside the organization. I don't know if it's Richard Sherman or trade. I don't know if this team is worth adding to after that game. That's something they're going to have to figure out, and we'll know more in the next few weeks. But I do know that I'm with you guys. Oftentimes, I will go the other way, and I wanted to give Trey Flowers a chance to show that he had grown and improved into his fourth year this year. Very clear through two games that has not been the case, and so something's got to be done.
What's the letter grade you give him?
I mean, it's not an F, but it's close.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't do his job. He was not good enough as your other corner in this game. They're going to have to find somebody else. There you go. Those are takeaways. We do those at 8 o'clock days after games, and now it's 8:15, which means it's time for Need to Know.
Takeaways. Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
No, you probably don't want to know this, but it is true. You can't win the game in the first, second, or third quarters. You've got to play all four. Pete Carroll knows it. You know it. The players know it. But unfortunately, they didn't do it. as they blow this one in the fourth quarter. Fans who were happy to return to Lumen Field yesterday left unhappy. Seahawks blow a two-score lead second half, wasted their opportunity in overtime, and eventually succumbed to Tennessee. 33-30, your final. Seahawks giving up more than 200 yards on the ground. Derrick Henry ran wild. 182 yards for the King, who acted exactly like that, especially in the second half. Three touchdowns, the tying score with 29 seconds left. He really was dominant. They had no answer for him in the second half, running wild. And the offense did very little during that time, only 6 points after the halftime. And I thought they were much more at fault. We've talked about it throughout the day. I point my finger at Russell Wilson and the offense. Twice they had the ball with a chance to win the game. Once with a 7-point lead late where they did nothing, three and out, had to punt. And once in overtime after their defense came up with a stop, they had the ball at their own 12-yard line needing just a field goal to win and went backwards. That can't happen. This is the better unit. This is an offensive team. Russell Wilson, Shane Waldron, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Chris Carson, offensive line, everybody together needs to understand that they are the ones who are most likely to get this done. They are the ones who have been paid the big bucks. And Russell Wilson, if you want to be the MVP, I judge quarterbacks based on wins and losses and what you do in the final 2 minutes of games. You had a couple of opportunities to win and unfortunately weren't able to deliver. That sits on the quarterback's shoulders, just like he gets the credit when he wins the game in the two-minute drill. The quarterback is the focal point of what happens at the ends of games, and unfortunately, Russell Wilson yesterday was not up to that task.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, let's get some good news, because the Mariners had a really nice weekend. Yes, it was good to win 2 out of 3 and get a little revenge against Kansas City from what they did a couple of weeks ago, but the real story is that the wins were keyed by Jared Kelnick. He went off. 5 of 7, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, a walk, 7 runs driven in, and he only really played in 2 of the 3 games, just a pinch hit in game 2. This is the player we've been waiting to see. An OPS over 1,000 so far in the 20 days of September. We've only seen flashes of it so far this year, but it was really nice to be reminded that this is why he was a top 5 prospect in baseball and that this is what the future should hold for Jared Kelnick, a guy who can just wreak havoc on an opponent and win a series by himself. He really was great. His fellow rookie Logan Gilbert, also dominant yesterday, went 7 strong innings, allowed only one run on 3 hits. Another great sign for the future. Unfortunately, though, just too many good teams ahead of you. Mariners 4 back still as the Red Sox and Jays just keep winning. They will start 4 in Oakland tonight. Couple of lefties on the mound. Tyler Anderson against Sean Manaea, 6:40 first pitch right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, to the college ranks, Dylan Morris, 367 yards, 3 touchdowns, pair of picks as the Huskies get right. Dominate Arkansas State 52-3. Nice to see Sam Heward get the ball late. He went 2 of 5 for 31 yards. Look, you can't learn that much about the Huskies by beating a non-Power 5 school like Arkansas State. But as we said, they'd scored some 95 points or so in their 2 games coming in. So good for them. Hopefully that gets them right before the start of the Pac-12 season. As for the Cougs, it looked good early against USC, a 14-0 lead, and then went very far, turned hard left the other direction. They lose 45-14, 45 unanswered as they played 3 quarterbacks in the loss. Let's take a quick look around the NFC West, where unfortunately everybody continues to win. Starting with Arizona, they beat Minnesota as the Vikings miss a 38-yarder at the buzzer. Kyler Murray, 400 more yards on 29 of 36 passing. He's a problem. Rams got a scare from Indy. They hold on, trailing by 3 with a chance to tie. Jacob Eason took his first snaps after Carson Wentz had a couple of ankle injuries, 1 to each ankle. Unfortunately for Jacob, 2 plays later, he had thrown incomplete and an interception. That was that. And San Francisco outlasts Philly, 17-11, your final there. That was an ugly game, a defensive game. Nick Bosa had a couple of sacks. They have issues with injuries. All 3 Niners running backs injured in that game. And they were not their first 3. They've already lost a couple of running backs. Raheem Mostert for sure. So not sure what's going on with the injuries in San Francisco, but it's a good question to ask John Clayton about as we talk to the professor coming up in 25 minutes.
A lot of texts about the TV references you've been making.
Yes.
A lot of the shows. So I'm going to be really quick on this one. 253, turn off the motion smoothing on the TV to eliminate the weird soap.
No, I've already done that. Oh, okay. I believe me, I know about the motion smoothing.
Okay.
You buy a new TV and instantly it looks like you're on set with them. Like, it looked like that whole motion smoothing thing, it makes it look like, rather than watching the show, it looks like you're holding a video camera on set of the show.
Yeah.
It's all, it's like a soap opera-like. It's terrible.
Yeah, the refresh rate's weird.
You got to get rid of that.
And I know losses are never good, obviously, but can you spin an early season loss like this into a positive thing, to bring everybody, and including us, to use your words, back to earth? Like, is this good that it happens week two? You get that really, really humble pie early. I know there's no way to make this positive.
I'm not there yet. If you're looking for a positive, it's a good thing this came against an AFC opponent. It didn't come in your conference nor your division. Obviously, division game matters a lot more. It's obviously good that it's early season, not late season, and hopefully gives you something to learn from. But I don't know about grounding. I don't think this team needed to be grounded. I don't think they needed to be brought back to earth. I don't know. I don't get the sense that they were arrogant and that's why they lost. I got the sense that, unfortunately, Tennessee punched him in the mouth. Tennessee came out and did what they needed to do. They were more physical on the offensive and defensive lines. The Seahawks' offensive line was not able to generate bupkis for Chris Carson. What do you have, 33 yards in the game?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do anything. 13 carries?
13 carries.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. They were not able to impose their will. They were not able to protect Russell in some big moments.
Alex Collins actually looked really good, the one run that he got.
He did. More Alex Collins. I'm all for that. I love Alex Collins. But ultimately, that was more of a, you know, an element of surprise play rather than a your offensive line blew him off the ball kind of play. So, yeah, the offensive line got beat down. Your defensive line wasn't able to stop Derrick Henry. Did it for a while in the first half, and then you got tired. Maybe that's because you only have three defensive linemen. I guess you brought up Kimdichie for this game. But, I mean, like, you don't have a ton of big physical defensive linemen. And, all right, Derrick Henry's the most physical back you're going to play against, but everyone in your division likes to run the ball. By the way, the NFL still runs the ball. I know everybody thinks that's gone from the NFL, and now you just wing it all over the place. You watch Baltimore last night? You watch a lot of the teams in the NFL? They're running the ball. They're physical. This is not a league that has just gone 100% finesse. Remember you had the game a few years ago? Was it Saints-Rams? I think it was someone in Rams. Where afterwards everyone was like, oh, the NFL's changed. 55-45. Now this is the new
Rams
NFL.
Rams-Chiefs.
It was like the whole league had changed. No. Nah, he's still going to run it. Yeah, he's still going to be physical. And when if you can't stop Derrick Henry and he runs for 200, you don't have a chance. Except you did. You did have a chance.
Two.
Your quarterback still couldn't get it done. All right, I will tell you about my dreams next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Text message here says, Salk, you asked what was going on with DK Metcalf. He needs to start playing football and stop playing DK.
That's what I was trying to say, but not that eloquent.
Another texter says, DK's got to get his head right. Last week, the taunting penalty. This week, the holding, unnecessary roughness, call out of bounds, just not productive, and he needs to get his head in the game. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. It's one of those sort of curious issues this year. Nobody expected DK Metcalf to be the focus of this conversation. I don't know whether the taunting stuff is in his head, if there's something going on with the offense that doesn't seem to suit him, but he is not. Look, he hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been what I expected him to be, which was obviously an incredibly high bar, and it's been coupled with all the penalties and just some oddity. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Did you see the irony of after the week one when they was asked why his hair was blue? Did you hear his answer?
To keep cool, right?
Yeah,
like the ups and downs of a season and all that. Yeah, I mean, it's been really strange the way he's reacted to this year. And, I guess some of my concern has nothing to do with him, and this is totally unfair. I'm just trying to be honest with, like, when you know the history of some other wide receivers, these big-bodied wide receivers, whether it's T.O. or Chad Ochocinco or some of these guys with similar talent levels, and some of the ways they've just sort of like allowed their persona to maybe get the best of them over time.
Maybe.
Yeah, I can't help but look at DK and hope that that's not the case. And he's not shown that it is. This is not like there's nothing inherent in him. It's just that we've seen other players at that position go down that road. And so, yeah, I guess I just have some concern about him. And I hope that that's not the direction he goes, because what we've seen has not been indicative of what I believe is the true greatness of DK Metcalf, who has the ability to be the best player on the field every time he's out there. So, you know, it's funny. I'm watching that game, and maybe you guys had the same thing. By the way, Mike Salk Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Maura Dooley is here. You just heard Justin Barnes talking as well. And thanks for being with us. We are now here every morning, starting at 6 now. starting at 6 a.m. So if you've always been a 7 a.m., 7:10 person, you can come earlier. And I see what's happening on the stream at 710sports.com. I know that a lot of people at 7 a.m., bam, all of a sudden they turn on the stream. I see it. I see the numbers jump right then at 7. So we just need to train people that things have changed. And we're starting at 6, like most morning shows do, instead of at 7, which we've done for a while. Anyway, 6 a.m.
Training, including us.
And we're now up on, yes, no kidding. That's for sure. We're very much in training. We now have the Apple Podcast thing up. So if you would prefer to download it, we're up at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or at 710sports.com. But I'm watching that game, and halfway through, I wanted to admit something, because it's, what does Brock always say? Confession is good for the soul, bad for the reputation. Bad for the reputation, good for the soul, to admit things.
Okay.
My mind started to wander, like, towards the dreamy, like, where could the rest of this season go? I know that I'm not the only one who started asking some fun questions about halfway through that game, like, oh, could this team be special? I've seen them now for, what, 90 minutes, and they look special. Their offense looks great. Their defense looks great. Could this be a team that finishes with a record far beyond what we had originally hoped for? Anyone start thinking about home playoff games all the way through, including another NFC Championship game here at Lumen Field? Anybody else get a massage? Oh, sorry, it's just the music. This is ethereal. Anybody else start thinking about Super Bowls? Anybody else go look up where the game is this year?
LA.
Start looking at flight prices?
Like, is now the time to book? I couldn't help it, man. I'm watching this game, and at halftime, I was thinking big. Sorry, I allowed my mind to get ahead of the actual play on the field. And a few hours later, record scratch. There it is. The questions were a whole lot different than I was asking. So let me throw out a couple of questions that we now have. And you guys can start to answer these. We'll start grabbing some calls maybe at 9 o'clock. Essentially, like, how much does this loss change your season outlook? If you want to jump on the horn, we'll get you guys starting now, but really at 9 o'clock, 206-421-3776, or texts at 710-710. A few questions. One, does this offense have a counterpunch and an ability to adjust? Because it looked that way in week one. And honestly, I thought they did some adjustment in this game in the first half, right? I thought we saw some things after the first quarter where Shane Waldron made some adjustments where I was like, oh, okay, they're changing it up a little bit. And then in the second half, it just looked like they were out of them. They were out of punches. So that's one. Two, can this defense generate consistent pressure? The best defenses do. The best defenses generate consistent pressure. And we saw against Indy that they're capable of it, but that whole rotational pass rush was not nearly as effective against the Tennessee offensive line that had had all kinds of problems last week and kept getting hurt. Taylor Lewan didn't play. Roger Saffold kept getting hurt. And yet they weren't able to generate that consistent pressure they needed. So I think that's a major question moving forward. Did a Pete Carroll team just give up 212 yards rushing at home? That doesn't seem like reality. Remember a few years ago, I got to remember what season, they all kind of blend together the years, but you remember the year they got run all over by Jacksonville and I think Tennessee? It must have been 4 years ago, the last time they played the NFC or the AFC South.
The Blake Bortles time in Jacksonville?
Yes, yeah, remember Jacksonville just ran all over. It was like disrespectful. It was like 3rd and 7. We're going to run Leonard Fournette at you again because they just couldn't stop it. And Tennessee did the same thing to them that year. They looked like they weren't physical. It was the year I remember thinking, gosh, their entire identity as a physical run-first football team is gone because they couldn't stop the run. They couldn't run it themselves. And unfortunately, that's what it looked like yesterday. So I think it's a very real question about how a Pete Carroll team and a Pete Carroll defense gives up 212 yards rushing at home. That's not the norm. Now, I know Derrick Henry's not the norm either. He is the best in the league. But that's still not what I expect out of this defense. And then shouldn't an elite quarterback do more with the ball in overtime, needing only a field goal, than two uncatchable passes and a game-losing sack? I expect that question to be answered pretty easily. I think we'll get an answer to that one pretty quick. Yes, Russ is expected to do more and will. I'm going to be hard on Russ this week because I think it's fair. I think that he had his opportunities and didn't get it done. But that doesn't mean I'm down on Russell Wilson. I was trying to teach this to Cecily yesterday. She had a bad day. Cecily had a tough day. Let me just be perfectly honest. My younger daughter, Cecily, she's 7. She had a tough day. Things didn't go her way yesterday. She got in trouble for a couple different reasons for a couple different times. And at the end of the night, she's like, oh, everybody hates me.
Oh.
Right? Everybody hates me. I'm like, well, Cecily, no, people don't hate you. And she's like, yes, everybody hates me. They're all mad at me and they hate me. All right. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. You ever get mad at people?
Yeah.
Do you hate them?
No.
Okay, well, the same thing is true of Russ today. Like, I'm mad at him. I don't hate him. I think this game and this loss are on his shoulders, but I still think he's Russell Wilson, one of the best in the game. But don't we also have to at least assign accountability when it, like, isn't that the whole point of what Richard Sherman, Doug Baldwin, and everyone wanted? Hold Russell accountable also, not only. It doesn't mean Russ is the only one accountable or you hate him. It means that he does deserve to be held accountable. And on this one, I'm going to hold him most accountable. He's the quarterback with the ball twice and needing just a field goal to win, didn't get it done. Sorry, that's on you.
Fair.
So I think there are some very real questions. It says Russ has always been my scapegoat. No, the quarterback gets the most credit and the most blame. He's a quarterback, not a scapegoat. He's a quarterback. So I think that while the questions at the beginning of this game or at halftime were all about the Super Bowl, those don't go away. It's not like you've forfeited your right to go to the Super Bowl by losing game two of the season. It was interesting to see those numbers, though, about the percentage of teams that start 2-0 that make the playoffs versus 1-1 or 0-2. You drastically improve your chances of being a Super Bowl team if you start 2-0. Well, they had that chance. Let it slip through their fingers. Huge bummer. Huge bummer.
I'm confused on... We talked about this a lot after week one, like the wizardry of Shane Waldron. We didn't see him in preseason. Is this meteoric first week just because they were so prepared for week? They had nothing to focus on, 2 weeks to focus on that one game. Week two comes back down to earth, and there has to be another major adjustment made. Like, when is the panic button for you?
Well, it's nowhere close to yet. I mean, you don't do anything based on 1 week. But what I will say is at least something to monitor, and I'll throw this on the question list, is... You know, how different is this offense when the other team can game plan for it? Indy didn't know what was coming, right? I mean, like, yes, A, Shane Waldron had all offseason to script out that game however he wanted, and B, no one else knew what was coming exactly. Well, this week, the other team had eyes on them, and it seems like they tried to completely change things up and go with a lot of different parts of their offense. I don't know if they're trying to put different things on tape. Maybe this is a big setup. I mean, like, I don't know enough about the way Shane Waldron wants this offense to work for us to judge him yet. What I do know is, as effective as they were in week one, is how ineffective they were in general in week two. And I thought Brock was right, that the second half looked like a lot of what we saw last year. So... a lot of questions. We'll take some of yours coming up here in 20 minutes. 206-421-3776. Right after the professor. How concerned is John? We'll ask him next. Mike Salk Show. 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive. Every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor John Clayton.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, how concerning was yesterday?
I mean, it was a bad game. I mean, they just played horrible. I mean, there's a lot of things that they can learn, but you know, go back to last year. Don't you see a similarity with that game and the New England game where Cam Newton came into town, had his one good game as a thrower and one good game as a quarterback, and was standing at the one-yard line right at the end, and he makes the run to the right as opposed to getting the run up the middle, ends up getting stopped, and Seattle wins the game. Well, I mean, here's the difference is, you know, they blew, and that's what's so different, and there's so many things that were bad in this game, but the difference is that, normally, for the last couple of years, this team has been trailing or been very close in the second half. In this game, they had a 2-touchdown lead and blew it.
Yeah, I keep coming back to the offense, though, and I know the defense gave up a lot of yards, but Russell Wilson twice had the ball in his hands mm-hmm. with a chance to go down, kick a field goal, and win. He had it with 6 minutes left in a lead, right? They go 3-and-out, and he had it in overtime where he gets the ball in the 12 and doesn't just go 3-and-out. He goes 10 yards backwards and ruins the rest of the opportunity for overtime.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put the blame on Russell Wilson. I mean, he threw for 343 yards and certainly in the overtime. And, you know, again, I think part of that has to be with the offensive line. you know, because again, they didn't have Brandon Schell because he got hurt with the ankle injury. I mean, certainly you can see that Damian Lewis, who was alternating with DeMarco Jones, you know, he was struggling with that groin injury, and so there was some problems there. They didn't get the running game going, and that's kind of a little bit of a surprise, particularly with Chris Carson in the backfield. But basically the penalties. You know, the 10 penalties that they had for 100 yards, the 5 dumb penalties that they've had on defense, you know, the fact that you're getting taunting calls and you're getting, which of course I get it, the taunting thing is ridiculous, but again, that's a bad decision by the league, but you still have to understand that they're going to do it. And then of course the defensive penalties, the personal fouls and things of that nature, and then the inability in the second half to stop Derrick Henry.
John, you mentioned the taunting stuff. I mean, I think you and I probably see this the same way, which is bad rule called appropriately yesterday on DJ Reed because mm-hmm. he's facing the player as opposed to away from him. In your conversations with the people you know in the league, you know, what do you think will become of this rule? Will it get changed?
I think after the season. I don't think they're going to change it now because I think that they're making an emphasis on it. And when they make an emphasis, it's kind of like that defensive pass interference change that they made a couple years ago. They stayed with it until the New Orleans Saints ended up, you know, losing a chance to go to the Super Bowl because of that new rule. And so I think they'll stay with it, but it's a bad rule. Like, even in the case of DJ Reed, did it look to you like, you know, DJ Reed was really taunting? I mean, you know, he was in some ways, you know, part celebrating the fact that, you know, he did well on that play, and certainly he did turn to the receiver.
Yeah, you know what? I would say yes. I think it did look like that. He was facing him, and he mm-hmm. did a whole flex thing. I don't think that he did anything maliciously, and I don't think that should be a penalty. Don't get me wrong.
Right, right, right.
But according to what the NFL is saying, yeah. I mean, because on the next play, we saw Al Woods celebrate by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And what the NFL is saying is you can celebrate as much as you want. Heck, you can have a whole coordinated celebration with all of your friends. The only thing we're saying you can't do is do it at the other team, in mm-hmm. their face. And I think it's a stupid rule, but it does seem like it shouldn't be that hard to follow.
No, but I can see it your way, but I just think it's a bad, bad rule because, again, you know, do you really want to watch more officiating or do you want to watch more
good
football?
Point. Yes, I mean, exactly.
And
that's
so
well said.
So now you come up with, you know, 2 extra calls during the game to a point now where you have 10 penalties. I just shake my head.
Well, and that thankfully didn't end up killing the Seahawks nearly as much as the late hit call mm-hmm. on Jordan Brooks and the late hit call on Jamal Adams. And I mean, like, they had the false start penalty. They certainly hurt themselves in other ways. Wanted to buzz around the league a little bit, talk about some of the young quarterbacks. I watched some of Zach Wilson, yikes, and I watched some of Sam Darnold, who he replaced, who sure looked a whole lot better. Is that just because of playing for the Jets?
Probably. Yeah, because, you know, Zach, I mean, he's off to a horrible start. I mean, the interceptions, the incompletions, all those different things. But then think about what he doesn't have, talent around him. I mean, you know, his left tackle is on injured reserve. They've got, you know, there was a couple more injuries on the offensive line. You know, 2 of his receivers, Mims and Crowder, they were out. And so, I mean, what does he really have? He doesn't have a tight end, and they don't have a running game. And so, I mean, he doesn't have a lot to work with. But also, the fact that all he did is kept on, you know, standing back there and throwing interceptions is not good.
Yeah. In the meantime, is Sam Darnold now good?
I think so. I mean, I think you can see getting it together with Joe Brady in Carolina is good. And again, is he great? No. But I think you can see that he's starting to turn some things around. I mean, you know, here's Carolina now, what, they're 2-0. But I think the big thing with Carolina is the fact that their defense blitzes a lot and they're causing a lot of problems. Now, of course, part of the issue was that they played New York Jets to open things up, so they weren't playing anybody. And so this was a little bit more of an advancement. But I think right now, I mean, you're looking at the 13 quarterback changes. Right now, he looks among the best.
Speaking of quarterbacks and injuries, Cam Newton still sitting out there as of yet unsigned. We had a whole bunch more injuries as mm-hmm. Carson Wentz hurt both of his ankles. Tua went out. Andy Dalton went out, came back in, went out again. Baker Mayfield went out, came back in. Any landing spot for Cam yet?
I question it. Now, again, today's an important day to find out because if he still is unvaccinated, you know, he won't. You can sign him, but he can't play this week. Because, again, you have to sit 5 days before you could even get in the building to get a physical. And so I still wonder about that. And so, you know, because also you got Tyrod Taylor. I mean, he's hurt. And then you got the, you know, it's like it was a brutal day for quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Really brutal. And, of course, Tua got the bad ankle injury. Or, I'm sorry, the bad rib injury. And you figure he's going to be out for some time. And Andy Dalton, just at the last word here in the last 20, 30 minutes, you know, it's not an ACL tear, but it's something that's pretty bad in the knee. Maybe it's a deep bone bruise, or maybe it's an MCL. We'll see about that. But, yeah, you got a lot of teams right now that are going to be looking for new quarterbacks.
And then finally, Seahawks, one of the teams that you would think would be part of the Richard Sherman group. I know the mm-hmm. Niners, Bucks, etc., and some quotes saying that Sherm has been seeing a therapist and feels like he's had the skills now and may find his way back onto a team this year. Where do you see him ending up?
I think there's probably more of a need in San Francisco, so I can see him going back there. Certainly, you know, New Orleans definitely is in bad shape at the cornerback position because, you know, they lose Janoris Jenkins, Jackrabbit, and then on top of it, you know, Marcus Lattimore had thumb surgery, and so he's on injured reserve. I mean, they have very little left to a point where they had to make the move for Bradley Roby, who, you know, came off the suspended list. He'll come off this week because he's suspended for one game this year. So, you know, it's... we'll see how it goes, but you know, Richard Sherman right now is in a position where there's definite interest.
Good stuff, John. We'll see what happens, and you know, talk to Pete about some of that today, and also about Sidney Jones and whether or not there's a role for him. Because you're right; those other teams may have more injuries. But watching Trey Flowers again this week, it's hard to imagine that that's the answer at that cornerback spot.
Yeah, it's an issue, and I know the fans are really down on him. Which, I mean, I guess you can understand. I know Pete's high on him, but then didn't we see the same thing with C.J. Procise?
Well, yeah, and Pete was high on him, but you know, if he has more plays like the 60-yard run from Derrick mm-hmm. Henry, where he gets caught inside, I mean, part of the reason they go with him over Akilah Witherspoon is because of his ability to defend the run. If that's going to be a problem too, then there's not a lot of reason to have Trey Flowers around.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, John, good stuff. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, there you go. John Clayton with me every morning at 8:45, a new time for the professor. John Clayton at 8:45. All right, I'm sick of talking. Can we hear from some people? I feel like I've been going a mile a minute here for the last 3 hours.
People are saying you need to lay off the caffeine. You don't even drink caffeine.
I don't drink caffeine. But let's hear from you guys. I'll ask a simple question. How much did yesterday's loss change your season outlook for the Seahawks? Did it change it significantly, or is it just, you know, one week? 206-421-3776. How much did yesterday change your season outlook for the Seahawks? 206-421-3776. Let's chat together before we talk to Pete Carroll at 9:30. We'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.